This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
A warning, this episode contains discussion of suicide. The sweeping historical epic isn't as prominent on TV these days as it once was, but it's roared back with Shogun. If you like your stories big and lush and sometimes brutal, this just might be the show for you. The FX miniseries has war, power struggles, violence, impossible love, beautiful naked people, and thorny questions about whose story it really is. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about Shogun on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Third Love. Third Love makes solutions for every bra problem. Give yourself more lift, smoothing, and get straps that stay put. Every style's wear-tested on real women, made from premium materials, with a virtual fitting room to help you find your perfect fit. Comfort and support are guaranteed. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with code PODCAST15.
Support for NPR comes from ADP. Don't know if you've heard, but the latest workplace trend is currently sneaking up on your business. What is it? Could be anything. The great cubicle comeback, maybe a global bagel shortage. Dealing with anything is what ADP does best, something they've been doing for over 70 years. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions so businesses are ready for the next anything. ADP, always designing for people.
Joining me today is Weilin Wong. She's the co-host of NPR's daily economics podcast, The Indicator from Planet Money. Hello, Weilin. Welcome back.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me on.
Also with us is NPR's TV critic, Eric Deggans. Always good to have you, Eric.
What up? What up? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So James Clavell's best-selling 1975 novel Shogun had an Emmy-winning adaptation back in 1980, at a time when both the historical epic and the miniseries event were really popular forms. Now there is a new TV adaptation of Shogun from Married co-creators Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo. The series takes place beginning in 1600 in a fictionalized but historically inspired feudal Japan. The previous ruler has died with only an heir who's not old enough to be in power, so a group of five regents is temporarily in charge, but everything has become chaotic and full of internal backstabbing. That's only the beginning, believe me. Particularly on the outs is Yoshii Torinaga, played by Hiroyuki Sanada. The regents would sort of like to kill Torinaga in order to remove him as an obstacle to their own power. And into this complicated environment floats an English sailor named John Blackthorne, played by Cosmo Jarvis. Blackthorne and his crew have been sent out to locate Japan and help wrest control of European trade with the country away from Portugal and the Catholic Church. In other words, to replace the current imperialists with new imperialists. But Blackthorne and his crew are captured. He soon gets to know Torinaga as well as Mariko, played by Anna Sawai, who becomes his translator and comes from a long line of samurai warriors herself.
I am to be your interpreter for today.
You speak Portuguese.
It is my honor to learn the language of my Christian teachers.
Catholic teachers.
Trying to summarize the plot over these 10 episodes would be both impossible and a little unsporting, but suffice it to say, it is really Toranaga's story. It's a combination of intrigue, brutal violence, wily political maneuvering, and complex loyalties. And I would say the B plot is the way Blackthorn tries to figure out how, and really if, he will fit into this war among the regents, particularly as he grows closer to Mariko. Shogun is streaming on FX on Hulu. I'm going to start with you, Waylon. What is your sort of bottom line on this show? How did you feel about it?
I really enjoyed it, maybe even more than I thought I would going in. I just found it so absorbing, so emotional, so textured. The details in this show are incredible. I felt so immersed in such a specific time and place. And I think what I really respect about this show, or like the feeling I'm left with, is that this is a show that is, for me anyway, like fundamentally about death. But it didn't feel really punishing to me in the same way that, for example, Game of Thrones did. Like, I ended up bailing on Game of Thrones. I did not bail on this. And on paper, they kind of explore a lot of similar territory. And Shogun has, like you mentioned, like a lot of extreme brutality, a lot of extreme violence in it. But in a way, the show also is like weirdly gentle. Like, it holds your hand and tells you basically at every turn that death is coming, that it's inevitable, it's lurking around every corner.
Before you meddle with our politics, just remember, we live and we die. We control nothing beyond that.
And so I felt like I was being taught how to be resigned to death in the same way that these characters were. And that's something that will really stay with me. It really moved me in that way.
That's very interesting. I had not thought about it that way, but that does make sense to me. Eric, how did you like this?
I loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. You know, one of the things that I loved about it was that it avoids two really big bugaboos that happen when you have a big, you know, white-centered company doing a show about people who aren't white, which is white savior narrative. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is white centering. You know, I was around when the first one aired, when the 1980 miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain aired, and that was very much from the perspective of the white character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this Shogun is very much about Japanese people, Japanese culture, and the white guy is an inciting character. You know, he does fuel a lot of what happens, but it is not shown through his eyes. He does help us, especially initially, kind of introduce us to this world, because as people explain things to him, we also get explanations. You can just tell that the people who created it worked really hard to center Japanese culture and Japanese people in it. And that was just a huge relief to me when I started watching it.
Yeah, I felt that way too. And I think they tell the story from the point of view that the Japanese people that he meets, especially at first, they perfectly well have very elaborate customs and expectations about how people behave, that they find him gross and offensive and vulgar, which he is.
They call him the barbarian.
The barbarian, yeah.
They call him a barbarian. And it's not a joke, you know? It's like they think that he is dirty, and his ideas about how often he should take baths and stuff like that are very different from theirs. And I think the show does a really good job of saying, look, the odd duck in this story is him. To me, he becomes kind of the B plot because really what this is about is Toranaga and his really complicated effort to, you know, sometimes he's kind of presented as a guy who kind of wants peace, and sometimes he's a guy who wants power, and sometimes he's a guy who thinks he's got to get power because otherwise there can never be any peace. He's a really complex character, and I really just found him fascinating, and I found the performance fascinating.
You know, there's one thing I wanted to break in real quick, and just, you know, when Waylon was talking about death, you know, so often these stories will sort of depict Japanese culture as not valuing life, particularly among the people who are the vassals who serve the lords. But what we see in this story is that duty is valued, and giving your life for duty is considered sort of the highest honor, your most important responsibility to your family, to your culture, to your society. And this show makes that argument that, you know, it's about valuing duty and how sometimes it's important to do that, even when it seems on the surface to be a waste of life. Mm-hmm. It's not a waste of life because you're sacrificing yourself for something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And jumping off of that point, Eric, and then jumping off of also Linda's point about kind of the role of Blackthorn, I think that the show kind of asks us to question whether the price of loyalty is too high sometimes, right? Tornaga, like Linda, you mentioned, yep, very complex figure. And sometimes you don't know if he is playing 4D chess or if he's playing a very good game of regular chess and just getting lucky. And you're never quite sure as you're going through, mm-hmm, like, is his luck finally running out or does he have some master plan? Along the way, he asks incredible sacrifices of his vassals and of the lords that report to him, right? And I think that through Blackthorn, as the outsider, he sometimes questions explicitly, what are you all doing?
Behold the great warlord. Brilliant master of trickery. Who tricked his own loyal vassals into a noiseless smothering. Mina Shinu.
That is a clever use of that character, right? To come in with the outsider eyes, which we also have as like Western audience members, to ask like, is this okay? Like, is this something honorable? Or should we question whether or not this is too high of a price to pay with your life for basically a political leader, you know? And I really appreciated the ambivalence with which a lot of these questions are offered up, you know? Like, is there something to be celebrated in feudal society? Like, is this a good structure for, like, a government, mm-hmm, for a country? I don't know. It's like, it's not looking so great, even if you believe Torunaga might have slightly better intentions or be a slightly more benevolent leader, incrementally so, than the other regents, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other thing that I think is so interesting is that there are a lot of kind of chewy questions in this series about culture and about duty and about death. But I also really admired the way that it also brings some of those pleasures of the like early 1980s event miniseries. Mm-hmm. It also has the kind of sweeping landscapes to look at and the big kind of climactic event that changes everything. And because there are 10 episodes, they've got a chance for a whole bunch of climactic events that change everything. Those event miniseries, if they also would have tragic deaths and terrible losses. And with something like this, I appreciated the fact that it brought back kind of the bigness of that. Because sometimes when you see a really big, expensive television production now, you kind of think, well, it's going to be expensive looking because it's going to be creatures or it's going to be effects or it's going to be superheroes or something like that. And this is a big, expensive looking show that just puts a lot of thought into creating these very specific settings and places and kind of doing these big battle scenes. The focus of the show is not the relationship between Blackthorn and Mariko, but that's an element of it. And so you get kind of the forbidden love. And I felt both like it was a very advanced take on the, mm-hmm, the historical miniseries, but there are also a lot of things about it that feel kind of retro to me. Not only because obviously Shogun had this actual adaptation, mm-hmm, in the past, but I just think it's so interesting that they mix, I think, a really, you know, a really kind of brainiac look at so many of these questions with this really just kind of, you know, exciting story of political intrigue and all that stuff.
You know, this is a style of film and television in Japan that happens anyway, you know, mm-hmm, these historical, mm-hmm, dramas. And Hiroyuki Sanada is well known for having been in a lot of them.
He has made you hatamoto, which is a very great honor.
He was a producer on this show in addition to being the lead actor. And so you can tell the people involved in putting it together had a real finely tuned sense of when the epic had to happen and when the personal had to happen and, you know, when the soap opera had to happen.
I was going
to
say there are soapy elements of a story like this as well.
You got to have it, man. It's necessary for this form, right? But the other thing that I love about it is that because it's been successful, because so many critics like it, because people have watched it, it is a big reward for FX stepping up and making a big bet. I mean, they spent a lot of money on this. You know, a great deal of the dialogue was not going to be in English and it was going to be subtitled. You were going to have a huge cast filled with actors that a lot of American TV audiences didn't know.
Right.
And you were basing it on a miniseries that was last on TV like 44 years ago. I mean, this was a huge bet and then be rewarded. This is so important because there are people out there who are always talking about, you know, why should you worry about diversity or why should you worry about how you handle these things? This is why, because when you do it right, it is successful. It makes money. This thing is going to be nominated for Emmys. It works. It's not just about doing the right thing, which is great. It is about creating something of quality, and you get quality when it's authentic and when you really step up and spend the money that's necessary.
I think just the fact, particularly that it has subtitles, means that it's not a naturally second screenable show if you don't speak Japanese. And listen, I watch plenty of things while I'm also on my phone. But I very much appreciate that they put, again, this big investment into this show that really bucks that trend. It's an achievement for that reason as well.
This is part of a different trend, though, which is getting American audiences used to TV shows and films that are created in languages other than English. And so, you know, they're bucking one trend by leaning into another. And this is something that Netflix in particular has really been a champion of in getting people excited about TV from South Korea, getting them excited about TV from India, getting them excited about TV from Latin America. And so people are much more used to reading subtitles than they used to be.
I think that this show really respects its viewer. It does require a little bit of, like, not homework, but you got to work a little bit. You know what I mean? Especially at the beginning, you really got to pay attention. But I think what's really nice about the show is that it rewards that work you put in, that little bit of work you put in at the beginning with, like, the epicness, the soapiness, a lot of the story beats that you really want from a show like this. Like, I think for someone who's looking for some really good action, you get excellent sword fighting. And then, like, on the romance side, Linda, I wanted to ask you about the romance element of this, because there is this, like, furtive hand brushing between Blackthorne and Mariko, which I think I rewound to watch again, because I was like, it instantly catapulted to my top five furtive hand brushing in pop culture. I was like, this is so swoony. It's so swoony. Yes.
I love that you have a list.
Well, and I think this goes into the category of the impossible love story.
Oh, yes.
The genuinely impossible love story, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a relationship that is what it is in the place that it is and the moment that it is. And in that way, it becomes in some ways more sexy and precious, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because this relationship is not an investment in a future of peace and happiness. In many ways, this relationship is a sanctuary from the things that are going on in this incredibly difficult situation for both of these people, that he is away from home and he is away from his ship and his men and doesn't know when he's going to figure all that stuff out. She has many, 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 many things going on in her life. I will say, and we have referred to this before, if you are a person who is hit hard by brutality, by kind of pretty specifically laid out violence. I mean, I think the violence in this show justifies itself to a great degree because it's part of explaining the brutality of what's going on more generally. This is war that is fought close up with swords, not far away with guns. And in a way, right, the brutality of guns, the efficiency of guns makes the fighting in war and also the, you know, the role of ritual suicide, which is part of the culture that's in play here. The violence is done up close because that's what the technology was for the most part, although there is a kind of a sub story about that as well. just be prepared, because it's pretty heavy if you're a person who is a little bit squeamish about violence. Mm-hmm. I'm at a point now where I've absolutely no shame whatsoever. If it's too much for me, I am going to hit the skip button a couple times and just be like, I get the idea. This is horrifying. Let's move along.
Yeah, I watched through, like, you know, splayed fingers a lot.
Yeah.
I think I really loved the way the show explored what does it mean to have agency within these really rigid constraints, and mm-hmm. what choices are available to people, and how do they take advantage of those choices? And there's sometimes a surprising number of choices you have, or a surprising number of ways you can exercise agency, even as a woman, you know, in feudal Japan as depicted in this show. And I was really fascinated by a lot of, like, small character choices, too, that take place during the show.
Yeah, I agree.
Can we talk about the actors, man?
Oh, man.
The actors here are just so awesome. From Cosmo Jarvis playing Blackthorn. Is that the coolest name of an actor ever? You know,
but again, like, they didn't pick an incredibly famous person, even
exactly.
To be the white guy, mm-hmm. right? Even to they didn't say well, here's a role where we could slot in somebody exactly. who is somebody that you've seen a million times on American prestige quote unquote television. They went for this guy, Cosmo Jarvis, who I think as you settle into this part, he does a really great job of keeping that guy, as we talked about before, sort of cool, but also horrifying.
Kind of a buffoon. Mm-hmm. And watch how he walks. Mm-hmm. He has this gait because, you know, everybody else is gliding in, mm-hmm. in their kimonos and stuff. And, you know, the men are very graceful. He is lumbering. And never comfortable. And I just yeah. love how his body language through the whole thing just, you know, communicates what a fish out of water this guy is. And even though he learns a little bit of the language and he learns a little bit of the customs and he finds ways to get by here and there, he is not Superman. He mm-hmm. does not master the culture or the language. And
right.
we get to see him be a real person.
Rain is very beautiful today. Rain.
His acquisition of some Japanese mm-hmm. Language skills is the result of effort and intentionality. It's not just because, you know, he shows up there and, you know, before you know it, he's basically Japanese. Like, that is not what they're doing here. That yeah. is, and you have.
You didn't pull a Tom Cruise? Is that what you're saying?
We have all seen stories. Yeah. What they're saying is, with a certain degree of intentionality, he can learn enough that he is more useful mm-hmm. to the people that he's loyal to. He gets by better himself. One of my personal favorites in this show was Tadanobu Asano, who plays Kashigi Yabushige.
Oh, the best.
And who is the most funny, tragic.
Uh-huh.
Yep. He's a warlord. He's not one of the regents, but he's kind of, and his allegiances are constantly shifting. I could never figure out whether I liked mm-hmm. this guy or didn't like this guy, or what kind of outcome I wanted for him. His relationship with Torunaga is very complicated, mm-hmm. but I love the performance so much. I could have watched a 10-episode series that was all about him.
I just want to see a supercut of his grunts, because he has some fantastic, hilarious grunts and reactions. And yep. to my earlier point about how this show to me was about death, he has this running gag throughout the show where he's constantly revising his will, and then he'll say, "This is my best one yet." And it's one of the few gags. I mean, there's not a lot of gags in this show,
no.
but that's one of them. And I thought it was very funny, and it, you know, fits into the milieu of the show.
Yeah.
And Hiroyuki Sanada was just amazing. And Anna Sawai, oh my God. I mean, these two leads were just really captivating.
Yeah. This, I think, feels like a very necessary second adaptation of a book in a world where we often talk about, why do we just keep going back and making the same books, the same adaptations?
Yeah.
You can justify a second adaptation, and I think this is definitely one of those times. All right. Well, we want to know what you think about Shogun, especially once it is over, which it will be not too long from now. Let us know what you think. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. Waylon Wong, Eric Deggans, thank you so much for being here, both of you.
Thank you.
It was great to be here. Thanks.
We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you haven't signed up yet, you want to show your support, and you'd like to listen to this show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in the show notes. This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Additional translation help is from Yuki Noguchi. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
On NPR's Throughline.
We cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt, because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.